My name is Mae Brussel, and this is the beginning of a one-hour broadcast called World Watchers, program number 779, November the 10th, 1986. Before I begin the program, we want to thank Uncle Gaylord's Ice Cream Cafe for the patron grant for this program of World Watchers. They are open 7 a.m. until 11 p.m. at the Doubletree Mall in Monterey. They serve old-fashioned ice cream, fruit ices, and more. Nice croissants and goodies included in the more. Thank you for the underwriting grant that brings you the following hour of World Watchers. Well, this was some week. I was really excited about the week until I came in and a friend of mine was in the studio who didn't seem at all knowledgeable about what in the hell was going on, and I assumed everybody knew some of the news that was going on this week that would make concerned people excited and understand a little bit about this electoral process that took place last week, among other things. I'm as happy as I can be. You may not see my smile, but you can tell it from my voice, I hope. First of all, the election results were fantastic, just in terms of the Senate alone, except for Rose Byrd in California, and I'm sure there were other events that were not so joyful around the country, but we don't keep up with those. It's all we can do to keep up with California, if we can do that, actually. The other thing that is so interesting is that Ronald Reagan has been pierced. That Teflon is gone now. His respectability, his credibility is gone. That includes among the Republicans, the Democrats, our allies, our enemies. They have one thing in common, and they have flooded the talk shows, ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN, Reuters, AP, UPI, flooded with stories about Ronald Reagan, what he says as against what he does, what are the laws, and there are at least four congressional committees waiting to get their claws upon him when he returns to Washington and the Congress reconvenes again. Something was wrong in River City. He was the salesman who gave us all the lines that we wanted to hear, or he thought we wanted to hear, and suddenly, within just 2 weeks, everything is flopping around, and it is a tremendous change in scene that is going on at the present time. The third thing that makes me very, very happy and satisfied and appreciative to hear is the fact that the National Security Council is no longer a advisory committee that sits in the background that you never hear about. Up till now, you couldn't get information about them from Freedom of Information Act. Nobody from the Security Council was ever forced to testify. And the name National Security Council is heard now from coast to coast, and members of Congress are insisting that from now on, the head of the Security Council will have to be confirmed by Congress, and that they will have to tell congressional oversight committees what actions they are doing. Because finally, people got the idea that they are a private army. They are that hidden government that Fletcher Prouty wrote about in the book, The Secret Team. They are the government I've been talking about for 15. This is my 16th year on the air. And they have taken the liberty with their 40 committee to kill any person, head of state around the world and in this country or elsewhere. Five people make the decision and call themselves the 40 committee. The National Security Council has been named over and over, and I'm really thrilled that it has been exposed the way it has. I'm sorry the way it happened, but what goes around comes around, and it certainly did start coming around this week. Now, just to begin the broadcast, I want to just mention a few of the congressional changes that are so exciting. Most of you read the paper, those of you that keep up with World Watchers, the idea of World Watchers, know these things. If you just depend upon me for your news, then I'm going to give you some of the things that have me very interested and excited. On October 25th, Ronald Reagan was campaigning, and he was blasting, in quotes, the liberal gang. He was making a 13-state blitz, and he said, in quotes, if the liberal gang regains the Senate, the nation can expect higher taxes, higher inflation, more crime, military weakness, indecision, attack on oil industry, and attack on free enterprise. Well, that was just about a week and a half ago. And now, announcing on programs such as Agronsky & Company, Meet the Press, Face the Nation, This new Congress, the Senate, intend to give no more funds to the Contras. They'll have no more judge appointees such as Mr. Mannion or even possibly Judge Rehnquist. They are going to lower the funds for Star Wars. They're going to override his veto on clean air. They are going to turn down chemical and biological weapons, and they're also going to put in fair labor laws and labor practices. The judiciary can call in Colonel Oliver North now from the National Security Council and find out about the funding of Contras that he has been spreading around. Reagan gave him the permission, and he's been doing it for 2 years, since 1983, spending $100 million on his own before Congress gave $100 million to the Contras. They can call in Mr. Gomez-Rodriguez. He's the associate of George Bush when Bush was CIA director. He's associate of Mr. Hassenfuss, who was arrested in Nicaragua. He's the man who killed Che Guevara and worked with Klaus Barbie and makes a cycle of the international fascista. He can be called as a witness, and his name is in the paper, Mr. Gomez. The United States government has been giving Killer Gomez housing in care in El Salvador, maintaining his domicile for a long time. Senator Strom Thurmond is out. He's no longer head of the judiciary, and we have Joseph Biden, who was on television this week assuring us that he would use the constitutional right as it was given to check and balance the appointment of justices that Ronald Reagan makes, that the Constitution allows the judiciary to pass and ask questions. Joseph Biden will be chairman of the judiciary. And also, the thing that I feared the most was that Ronald Reagan, as I mentioned before on World Watchers, would be appointing the new FBI director in 1988. And heaven help us if he had his own Congress and Senate stacked with the kind of appointments he's been making. So there's four justices over the age of 77, and the FBI director will come in 1988, and we will have a strong judiciary to handle it. Jesse Helms lost his handle on the right-wing base in North Carolina, and Governor Terry Sanford won that Senate seat in North Carolina. Paul Laxalt, the heir apparent to the throne in Washington, lost. His friend John Santini lost in Nevada as a senator. Ronald Reagan went there twice during the campaign to get him elected, and Nevada elected Representative Harry Reid instead. This is a state with mafia, organized crime, defense, nuclear testing, missile programs, military. So with all the far right wing of the mafia element, the Las Vegas gang, and the military, they didn't get the senator they wanted. The people voted for Representative Harry Reid, and this almost sinks the presidential nomination of Paul Laxalt because he couldn't even take his own state with his best friend. Senator Jeremiah Denton is out from Alabama. He was probably, it's a toss-up, the most reactionary member of Senate, a total war hawk, supported Star Wars. He was against senior citizens' rights, against labor, civil rights issues. He lost to Representative Richard Shelby. In California, Alan Cranston had a close race, but close doesn't matter. It only takes one to win, and he won over Mr. Ed Schau, whose campaign was promoted by people like Henry Kissinger and David Packard from the Silicon Valley. You know, the Hewlett-Packard group were helping Schau try to make a Bobbsey twin out of Pete Wilson and Ed Schau. It didn't work. Cranston is in. Colorado was the biggest pull for Gary Hart. He wants to run as a presidential candidate. He gave up his Senate seat. Again, a military state, a lot Air Force base, a lot of military and very, very wealthy people in Colorado. And Reagan went there twice, and he offered them the goodies. He handed out Star Wars contracts. Vote for my man, and we'll give you the money for Star Wars. And he didn't get that either. Timothy Wirth, the Democrat, won. Reagan wanted Ken Kramer. He said, if you give this one, give it to the Gipper. Well, there was a cartoon in the paper when he said that, and the person speaking with him said, yes, that's just what you got. Give one to the Gipper, you got one of the Senate seats that you wanted. This was a big victory for Gary Hart because he allegedly or possibly would be running against Paul Laxalt. So Hart has the support of his own state, and Laxalt's candidate didn't. And he's very, very close to Timothy Wirth. I never heard Wirth talk, and he was on the night of the acceptance, the elections giving acceptance speech, and he sounded very brilliant, very capable. and everything sounded really good. He's a man who's strong for trade unions, peace movements, minorities in Colorado. He supports a nuclear test ban. He favors armed control agreements. In Florida, this is the election that sent Ronald Reagan to bed at 8 o'clock. His Senate pal Paula Hawkins lost. That was the first return of his defeat that came in. And she lost to Governor Bob Graham. She has the worst, one of the worst records in the Senate on arms control, labor, civil rights. She's known, they politely say, for exaggerating facts, which means a lie. She claims that her fame is tackling drug issues in Florida, and she's in the midst of the anti-Castro Cuban CIA drug dealers that she associates with in Florida. And Senator Graham, the new Senator Graham, supports social programs, environmental protection, support of labor, senior citizens, and so forth. Another hot potato that Reagan had was Linda Chavez, who formerly came out of the White House. Some of her dirty speeches, you could almost tell, were written by Thomas Buchanan. This is the Maryland race, and she lost out, terrible innuendos, one of the nastiest races. She lost to Barbara Mikulski, who now moves from the House to the Senate, a woman who's progressive. She's identified with the nuclear freeze. She's pro-education. She works Latino, grassroots progressive with labor and working class. Governor Rhodes of Ohio got up through the primaries. That's the governor who approved of the Kent State shootings at the time of the Cambodia bombing on his campus. And he also protected Gordon Novell, a member of the Defense Department team who Jim Garrison wanted to question regarding the John Kennedy assassination. Governor Rhodes didn't win this election. There were some bad things, too. They weren't all good. Senator Alphonse D'Amato won again. He's a very strong candidate from close to the Vatican to the Grenada Medical School to the Korean Airline lies and propaganda. He had huge wads of money, outrageous hunks from the Wall Street area in New York City. And Arlen Specter from Philadelphia won again in the Senate. He's the CIA senator from the Warren Commission, who created the fictitious bullet 399 that allegedly killed John Kennedy. And he also lied in the investigation of Joseph Mengele and covered up the fact that Mengele did not die in 1979. One of the saddest things was that the people in California who voted for Duke Majan voted all the rest of the slate Democratic and then didn't vote for Justice Byrd. How they can let one man like Duke Majan make three appointments in one day for the Supreme Court is reprehensible. I'm not going to scold now, but that's the way it goes. Senator Ted Kennedy will head the Labor Committee, Labor and Human Resources Committee, where he says he can be effective in making changes there. And the Judiciary Panel, as I said, will be under Senator Joseph Biden, who is very, very rigid. And then I must say that the ghost that will haunt everyone who comes to Washington at this point, to any Congress, any congressional meetings, when they hear Robert Kennedy Jr., it will absolutely amaze them to remember where they were in Dallas and to see him as he put social programs into effect. He won in Massachusetts. The elder citizen, Tip O'Neill, stepped down and gave it to the young Kennedy. Started where John Kennedy, his uncle, began. And when you hear his voice, if you heard him the night of the acceptance speech, you see his father at the Ambassador Hotel on the floor, the hotel owned by David Shine, Roy Cohn's partner, cohorts of Richard Nixon, and you hear John Kennedy's voice. And I also know that Ronald Reagan and Richard Nixon have to live like Hamlet and watch this character in the House of Representatives, and they must sometime look at each other or themselves and say, was it worth it all that they did have an absolute part in the cover-up, if not the actual murder, of John Kennedy, and possibly foreknowledge ahead of time, but working and protecting the assassins, and their careers were tangled in with the very people who killed John Kennedy and Robert Kennedy. So Nixon had his problems, and Reagan's having the same problems. And to top it off, the icing on the cake is Joe Kennedy Jr. Now, before I get into the massive amount of news that is coming down, I want to put it into categories for you, because I'll be covering these bases. Some I've started before, but there are 8 bases that will be in the news probably 9 continuously through the entire next year. We're just almost there. And I will be doing large segments of these stories, and then I will be doing the related parts of the stories to each other that are in the news, and I'll detail them for you. But before I do that, I want to take time each week to update what I call one-liners. There's some articles that are too important to pass up. They have to do with past World Watchers programs or current news that's going to be important or material I want to get into when I have more time and I don't want it to slip away. So I want to acknowledge and let you know that I'm aware of these things, but I want to run down a few items for you, 11 top stories, and then get to the other part of the program. The first is an article, there are many on the subject this week, but I'll just cite one for each subject, titled Challenger Figure Gets Top Shuttle Post, San Francisco Chronicle, November the 8th. Arnold Aldrich, one of the highest NASA officials involved in the decision to launch the Challenger, was named director of the shuttle program. He's been appointed now not only to be one of the program advisors, one of the people who said go and turned down the advice of the engineers of Morton Thiokol. He has been made in charge of the entire shuttle program. He has been promoted, Arnold Aldrich. The second article, U.S. offers farms record cash plan not to grow grain. That's a New York Times article. The headline, it's a little wordy, but you'll get the idea. It was October the 24th. The Department of Agriculture wants to idle 10 million acres of farm in the United States. The taxpayers will put up $2 billion to not grow anything on 10 million acres of farm. Nothing at all. The storage for surplus food this year is $1 billion, and they have to put on barges in the ocean, and some of it is just dying in the field. Where is Bob Geldof? Where are the hands across America? That's why I don't talk about those programs or participate in those programs, because they're street theater. They're so bad. They're so phony. They're so moment-to-moment activity, raising money to sell records. We are the world, and our government and our current president of the United States is putting $2 billion to grow nothing, and they're spending $1 billion to destroy what they have or put it out where nobody can touch it. That is total insanity, not only for the people who do it, but for the people who allow it. The third item is U.S. envoy blasts Pravda's linking aides to Pentagon. This is Washington Post. And I cited for you an article from Izvestia several months ago, the Soviet Union saying that the Pentagon is responsible for making the disease AIDS, which I think they put together at Fort Detrick, Maryland in 1971, started in 71. And there's a lot of evidence to support that I've had on broadcast. There was a cartoon in the Soviet Union of an American officer buying a vial of AIDS virus. And our ambassador to the Soviet Union was furious that they carry these cartoons and articles. The next subject, defense chief keeps ties to the United States with his eye on the presidency. This is Wall Street Journal, November the 4th. Field Marshal Abdel Halim Abu Ghazal of Egypt. Now, the reason I mention that is that this week, Mr. Abu Ghazal is noting that he wants to be the next president of Egypt. He's the fellow that visited Vice President George Bush, had lunch with him, took a plane and went back to Egypt, sat next to Anwar Sadat, who was murdered and gunned down. Abu Ghazal works with our Defense Department. He was trained in the United States. And the very week that George Bush is linked to illegal arms to Iran, the very week that George Bush is linked to illegal arms to the Contras, Mr. Abu Ghazal, I guess, wants to remind George Bush of what he knows about the murder of Sadat, and he lets Wall Street Journal know that he intends to become president of Egypt. The next item is Reagan made cleared of arms smuggling, and I want to do a lot on that later. This is a woman who rearranges Nancy's clothes and closets, that travels with her to foreign countries, who was the translator for a sale of 50,000 rounds of .22 caliber ammunition to go into dictator Stroessner's Paraguay. The men involved in the sale are indicted and will have charges. She said she was just the translator. .22 ammunition, 50,000 rounds, would kill 50,000 people. in Paraguay, given the way they handle the bullets. Next item, key evidence in DeLorean defense case thrown out, the LA Herald. Crucial evidence involving a signature on a document is considered by the judge to be a forgery. It has to do with money that he took from the Cayman Islands to Swiss banks and involved with Colin Chapman of Lotus Car Company, who was murdered right afterwards, after these stories began to become exposed. The judge has thrown it out, and of course the control man for DeLorean is Gordon Novell, who worked with Governor Rhodes in Ohio, got protection from him, as I mentioned, the Defense Department babysitter for DeLorean, and he tried for his main defense to use what they said, judge said, was forged documents. A book came out, I guess in the spring or summer, I bought it around the summer this year, called Mayday by Michael Beschloss. It isn't a new book, but it's just coming out in England, and the Washington Times this week had an article, the headline is, "YouTube Pilot Was Victim, Says Author," and it has to do with Gary Powers and the YouTube plane, and how Powers was used for the Cold War to break up the meeting of Khrushchev and Eisenhower in 1960. The interesting thing is that the Washington Times, published by Reverend Moon and with Arnaud de Borchgrave as the editor, made notes that U.S. News and World Report carried segments of this book in the longest serialization of any book they have. Well, I had their reviews of U.S. News and World Report in the serialization, but I forgot to connect that Nicholas Daniloff, the person working for U.S. News and World Report in the Soviet Union that triggered the summit meeting, that awful summit with Ronald Reagan and Mr. Gorbachev, Daniloff was in the Soviet Union when Gary Powers had his trial, when Leon Marina Oswald were there, and I did two broadcasts on Daniloff and these connections. So it's interesting that the U.S. News and World Report had this long serialization of something that happened in Soviet Union in 1960, because I said that Daniloff set up with Mr. Taubman of the New York Times and the powers that be to duplicate the purpose to prevent the summit that Ronald Reagan and Gorbachev were planning for the early part of next year. Another article, Karachi hijacking linked to Lebanon rather than Syria. A long article from the New York Times. Reagan's terrorism, his blaming Gaddafi and Libya and all the excitement of the election campaign, the shooting in Turkey of 22 Jews, the hijacking the day before, all this great agent provocateur activity. Now they cooled off a little in our allies, the Zia of Pakistan and that gang, and they say, oh yeah, it was someone from Lebanon. It wasn't Gaddafi after all. Another item, Star Wars traced to Eisenhower era. This is an interesting long news story from the New York Times with maps and charts, and it says that the ICBM started in 1958. Now, it took 40 years to admit that the Star Wars, the plan for the laser beams to scorch the Earth and all that jazz, began in 1958 with our Wernher von Braun and Walter Dornberger. The truth is that Star Wars started in Nazi Germany, and it combined with various people in our Defense Department in the OSS as early as 1944, before the war was over. And when Eisenhower was a general running the war, the Star Wars idea to bring those rocket and missile scientists to the United States began when they buried their papers outside of Punamon, the rocket space scientists, Dornberg and von Braun and others, and used that as their ticket to the United States. Another item, Frank Sturgis says a watch scam was for the United States. Watergate defendant Frank Sturgis was arrested in Florida. He was selling stolen watches. He was helping prisoners get out of prison early by paying persons off. And when they picked him up, he said, I'm still an agent for the United States government. That's a Watergate defendant who served time in jail, and now he's dealing with stolen watches. And he says the government is still using him as an agent. Another item which is serious given the mentality of Ronald Reagan, Pakistan says it might request air patrols by the United States. That's New York Times. Reagan is getting closer to war. If he declares war, he's always identified with Franklin Roosevelt. He would stay in term, third term, get the Constitution changed or whatever it takes. And he's a very dangerous man. Next week, I'll share with you information I have. I talked with this Dr. Walsh last night. I had long conversation with him and visited his offices in Beverly Hills. He's a psychiatrist who worked with Mayo Clinic for about 20 years, speaks six languages, and I met him because he had written items that Ronald Reagan wasn't mentally fit to be president of the United States, that he was psychologically sick, too sick to become president of the United States. He's the only psychiatrist who ever saw Rudolf Hess in Spandau Prison, and he's well-trained, as I say, a linguist, and I spoke to him because I remembered seeing him before, and so many things that Reagan is doing now indicate a real mental sickness, and I'll do some of those with you later and run down my conversation with him, because I do not think he's fit, and I think he would like to start a war, and when we start circling Pakistan, we're awfully close to the Russian border. The San Francisco Examiner had an article yesterday, SS killed John Kennedy's brother. A newspaper in Germany said that Joe Kennedy Jr., the older brother of John Kennedy, was killed by SS troops July 1944 while trying to escape from his aircraft. He was interrogated by the Waffen-SS. A man named Karl-Heinz Wen gave an account of his interrogation, and then he was murdered. Now, the interesting point about this story is that by July 1944, Wild Bill Donovan of the OSS and Alan Dulles of the OSS in Bern, Switzerland, were already arranging with Heinrich Himmler and Richard von Weizsäcker, the father of the current president of Germany, for the arrangement of using Nazis after the war, incorporating them into America, American intelligence system, American army. And Joe Kennedy's ambition, his father's stated ambition when he was ambassador to Great Britain and in public life, was that he wanted his oldest son to become president of the United States. And after the war, the powers that be wanted Douglas MacArthur or General Eisenhower to be president, hopefully General Patton, who was murdered and wasn't able, he had that convenient car crash, but they wanted military persons to be president of the United States, and Joe Kennedy Jr. was not that kind of a person. His father was an avid, avowed Nazi, and was brought home by J. Edgar Hoover because he expressed so many Nazi sentiments when he was ambassador to Great Britain. You can have them, but you can't say them publicly. So it's interesting, at this time, 44 years later, the subject comes up about the Waffen-SS, because the SS and the OSS melded as early as mid-1943. And when Joe Kennedy was brought in for interrogation, I'm sure he wasn't bashful to say, my father is Joe Kennedy, former ambassador to Great Britain, and so forth. And after the interrogation, or no matter, I don't know who they contacted or who they were in touch with, people like Prince Bernhard, he was working for IG Farben. He was in the SS, the Gestapo of Adolf Hitler, and he was allegedly helping the Free French and the Dutch Resistance. And there's a book, Betrayal at Arnhem, that goes into the role of double agent of Prince Bernhard, and later he formed the Bilderberger Group. So this plane was shot down near Normandy, and whether they contacted somebody like Bernhard and got rid of Joe Kennedy Jr., I don't know. It's interesting, when John Birch was killed in China, he worked for the SS, and the people that formed the John Birch Society said that murder was the first bullet of World War III. But it could be that the murder of Joe Kennedy, which preceded it by a year or by 8 months, might have been the first bullet of World War III. There is a book called The Lost Prince, Young Joe, the Forgotten Kennedy. I have the book, and it tells the life of Joe Kennedy, the short life, and his ambition to be president, and so forth. It goes, a new story on the death of Joe Kennedy. Now, just two more items before I get to the other section of the program. There was a story this week in the San Francisco Chronicle and the U.S. Today. A Los Angeles company got a $10 million contract to provide Americans to replace Soviet embassies in Moscow. The Soviet Union kicked out their people that were working, and the contract was given to a company called Pacific Architects and Engineers. And imagine getting $10 million for drivers, workers, laborers, mechanics, and so forth at the embassy. Well, I got out my article that I wrote in 1974, Why Was Patricia Hearst Kidnapped? The SLA is a CIA, which is a book-length article published in The Realist, summer of 74, and it details the connections of the Defense Department, the CIA, the FBI, and National Security to the kidnapping of Patty Hearst. And I gave a biography in that article on page 11 about Colston Westbrook, who set up the entire SLA operation, and he worked for 3 years under Pacific Architects and Engineers, a CIA cover, the same agency that's going to send the help to Moscow to shovel the snow. We'll take a one-minute break now because I'm going to speed along with the second half. It goes pretty fast when you have so much news to share.